Wednesday, June 25th. The first reading from Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 12 and 17 through 18. The word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Fear not, Abram, I am your shield. I will make your reward very great. But Abram said, O Lord God, what good will your gifts be if I keep on being childless and have as my heir the steward of my house, Eliezer? Abram continued, See, you have given me no offspring, and so one of my servants will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, No, that one shall not be your heir. Your own issue shall be your heir. He took him outside and said, Look up at the sky and count the stars, if you can. Just so, he added, shall your descendants be. Abram put his faith in the Lord, who credited it to him as an act of righteousness. He then said to him, I am the Lord who brought you from Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land as a possession. O Lord God, he asked, how am I to know that I shall possess it? He answered him, Bring me a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old she-goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. Abram brought him all these, split them in two, and placed each half opposite the other, but the birds he did not cut up. Birds of prey swooped down on the carcasses, but Abram stayed with them. As the sun was about to set, a trance fell upon Abram, and a deep, terrifying darkness enveloped him. When the sun had set and it was dark, there appeared a smoking firepot and a flaming torch, which passed between those pieces. It was on that occasion that the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, To your descendants I give this land, from the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates. Haydock Commentary. God says, Fear not, because Abram might naturally be under some apprehensions lest the four kings should attempt to be revenged upon him. He is given a reward since he has so generously despised earthly riches. Abram was not asleep, but saw a vision of exterior objects. Abram asked to what purpose he should heap up riches since he has no son to inherit them. Abram knew that God had promised him a numerous posterity, but he was not apprised how this was to be verified and whether he was to adopt some other for his son and heir. Therefore, he asks modestly how he ought to understand the promise. Abram's faith in God was reputed by God, who can judge no wrong, as an act of righteousness, so that Abram increased in justice by this act of faith, believing that his wife, now advanced in years, would have a child, from whom others should spring, more numerous than the stars of heaven. This faith was accompanied and followed by many other acts of virtue. See James 2:22. The Blessed Virgin Mary also asked how this shall be done, without the smallest degree of unbelief. Abram wished to know by what signs he should be declared the lawful owner of the land. The animal victims were to be 3 years old, because they then obtained a perfect age. A deep sleep or trance fell upon Abram, like that of Adam in Genesis chapter 2:21. God revealed to Abram the oppression of his posterity in Egypt, which filled him with such horror as we experience when something frightful comes upon us as suddenly in the dark. This darkness represented the dismal situation of Joseph confined in a dungeon, and of the Hebrews condemned to hard labor in making bricks and obliged to hide their male children for fear of being discovered and slain. Before these unhappy days commenced, the posterity of Abram were exposed to great oppression among the Canaanites, nor could they in any sense be said to possess the land of promise for above 400 years after this prophetic sleep. The fire pot and flaming torch was a symbol of the divinity, passing, as Abram also did, between the divided beasts to ratify the covenant. See Jeremiah 34:18. The Wadi of Egypt is a branch of the Nile not far from Pelusium. This was to be the southern limit, and the Euphrates the northern. The two other boundaries are given in Numbers 34. Perhaps Solomon's empire extended so far. At least the Jews would have enjoyed these territories if they had been faithful. The Gospel from Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 20. Jesus said to his disciples, Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but underneath are ravenous wolves. By their fruits you will know them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Just so, every good tree bears good fruit, and a rotten tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a rotten tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. So by their fruits you will know them. Haydock Commentary. Beware of hypocrites with their outward appearance of sanctity and sound doctrine. Such hypocrites can scarcely ever continue constant in the practice of what is good. They usually affect an extraordinary appearance of zeal and holiness, calling themselves evangelical preachers and teachers of the gospel, as if that church which preceded them and which descends by an uninterrupted succession from the apostles did not teach the pure gospel of Christ. False prophets and heretics are far more dangerous than the Jews, who, being rejected by the apostles, are also avoided by Christians. But heretics and hypocrites, having the appearance of Christianity, having churches, sacraments, etc., deceive many. These are the rapacious wolves of whom St. Paul speaks in Acts chapter 20. Origen calls them the gates of death and the paths to hell. As the true church is known by the four marks of its being one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic, so heretics and false teachers are known by certain vices and the pernicious effects of their novelties in religion. As the true church is one by its members submitting with humility to the authority established by Christ, see Matthew 18:17, so are false teachers known by their separation from the ancient church and their divisions among themselves, the necessary consequences of rebelling against the authority established by Christ and alone capable of determining controversies. The same pride and other secret vices which make them despise government, 2 Peter 2:10, make them also not afraid to bring in sects of perdition, blaspheming, and this in civil government as well as ecclesiastical. Those that call themselves reformers in the beginning of the 16th century, of all others, were remarkable in this. What bloody tumults and wars were there not produced in Germany by the first reformers in that country? Calvin overturned the government of Geneva, and his followers under the name Huguenots filled France for a great length of time with slaughter and civil wars, frequently shaking the throne itself. In this country, that is England, the first cause of its separation from the universal church was the unbridled passion of a tyrant. The effects were adultery and the murder of the successive queens that he had taken to his adulterous bed. In the reign of his successor, the insatiate avarice of a corrupt nobility, gratified with the sacrilegious plunder of the church, established what is called the Reformation. The fear of being compelled to disgorge the fruits of their rapine contributed much to the confirmation of that order of things in the reign of Elizabeth. She was inclined to it by the circumstances of her birth, which could not be legitimate if her father's marriage with Catherine of Aragon was valid. The natural spirit of this heresy, though checked a while and kept under by the despotical government of this queen, appeared in its own colors soon after, and produced its natural fruits in the turbulence of the times that succeeded, and the multiplicity of sects that are continually springing up to this very day. As the true church is holy, recommending various exercises of religion tending to purify human nature and render men holy, such as fasting, confession of sins, evangelical counsels, etc., so false teachers cast off all these, promising liberty, see 2 Peter 2:19, and giving full rein to the lustful passions, thus giving a liberty of living as well as a liberty of believing. Another fruit of false teachers is separation from what was the universal church before their time, and which continues to be still the far greater part, not being confined to one state or country. Finally, false teachers are to be known by their not being able to show that they have received their doctrine and mission from the apostles in a regular succession from them. Some of our modern divines would spurn at the idea of holding their doctrine and orders from the Catholic Church, such as it existed at the time of the Reformation, which is precisely such as it exists at the present moment. In answer to this, it has been retorted that the fruits of the Catholic religion have been as bad or worse, and the horrors of the French Revolution are particularly mentioned as a proof. That great crimes have been committed by those who profess themselves Catholics is not denied, but that they were prompted to them by the nature of their religion is certainly not admitted. The Revolution of France in particular was the effect of the people falling off from their religion. As well may the Puritans that brought Charles to the block be said to be Catholics, because they or their parents once had been such. As well may be the present bench of Protestant bishops be said to be Catholics, because the bishops of their sees once were so. Or that Robespierre, Marat, and the Jacobins that persecuted Catholicity in France were Catholics or directed in the least by Catholic principles. It is not to be understood by Christ's words that a man who is once bad can never bring forth good fruit, but that as long as he remains in the state of sin, he cannot perform any meritorious action. So says St. John Chrysostom. Both good and bad men may change their lives. Christ's words, according to the unanimous consent of the fathers, is only to be understood while they remain such as they are. If a bad tree begin to produce good fruit, it becomes a good tree. Not those who do one or two good works are just, but those who continue permanently to do good. In the same manner, not those who commit one or two bad actions are wicked, but those who continue in evil.